Hi, welcome to The Behavioral Profit, the podcast where leadership behavior meets bottom line results. I'm your host, Debbie Longo, Executive Behavioral Coach. Each week, we unpack the mindsets, habits, and cultural shifts that turn teams into high-performing, profit-driving powerhouses so you can lead with purpose and win with people. Joining me today is Steve Morris, a mechanical engineer turned leadership strategist with an MBA and 34 years guiding high-performance teams on sea and land. After designing multi-million dollar racing yachts and project managing new ships for the U.S. Navy, Steve became a certified EOS implementer and positive intelligent coach. He now helps entrepreneurs and executive teams shift who they're being so their actions, cultures, and results follow effortlessly. Get ready to explore behavior-driven leadership from the inside out. Good afternoon, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Debbie. That's a great introduction.
Today, we're going to talk about, Steve, you pivoted from engineering multi-million dollar yachts and Navy ships to coaching leadership teams. What specific mindset shift did that move demand of you? And how do you help clients engineer a similar shift instead of just tweaking tactics?
I'm going back to the beginning of my career and that sort of that engineering, the project management, very sort of goal-directed work. And I think what I've really learned in the transition and coming into coaching is kind of seeing that, and it comes back to a quote from James Clear, actually, from Atomic Habits, which is you never rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. And I think that that's one of the real mindset shifts that I have seen and experienced is this, we can set these goals out there, but unless we're really putting systems in place, those goals remain a dream. And I can particularly look back over my career and kind of see some of those times when a goal was not met just because we really didn't have a system in place to be able to get there.
Yes, I agree with that. Thank you very much. So my whole entire coaching, everything I do when I make a plan for my clients, every aspect of my coaching, helping them in every way, shape, and form is all about developing systems. Yeah. And also, humans are a creature of habit. So if I develop systems, it's very easy for them, if they do the same thing over and over, it's very easy for them to get it without just doing things randomly, right? And having no system. So that was very, very good that you pointed that out. The next question is, many entrepreneurs chase the latest framework, yet you argue that who they're being drives everything. How do you measure being in a world obsessed with quarterly metrics? What evidence convinces skeptical CEOs that inner work isn't soft?
Ultimately, my experience is that they're not disconnected. And so, yes, how do we measure being? What are those external measures that might sort of show up on a company scorecard or KPIs, for example? And so one of the things that I think, you know, as you're asking me this question, what comes up for me is remembering a team and that we're very challenged and sort of beset by a certain incident that had happened environmentally in their business. And who they were being coming into the conversation was, are we going to cut staff? Are we going to reduce salaries? They were in the downward spiral. And it's about how they were seeing the world. And so the shift I worked on with them, they had a couple of new ideas in their pipeline that they just hadn't explored. And so getting out of that downward spiral into the art of possibility, creating possibility, how might we go after these new business areas that were on the issues list? And ultimately, the team got out of that downward spiral and was able to continue their business forward very successfully. So there's a very externally measurable result, like the business is still in business and they're making profit. And that resulted from a shift in who they were being. Everybody always has an internal stance, by which I mean like how they see the world, how they see each other, how they see themselves, you have that anyway. People get up out of bed in the morning and their mind just starts going down that racetrack of how they see the world, each other, and themselves. And so one path can be a path that's taking the business off track, I would say. Another path that you can choose to take with who you're being and those things is can be a more positive, generative path. You're going to take one path or the other. So I think, to me, the answer to the question is, like, all of the external results of the business come from the internal stance of who the leadership team are being.
To me, it's kind of like really inner work rather than focusing on the metrics. That is all outside forces, things that have to do with a corporation and developing a corporation and making profit. So those things are needed. But how does it start? Does it start with figures and numbers? Or does it start with having a positive attitude, getting systems? And when I change my behavior first, and I change my attitude and I go into that, whether I'm developing a business from scratch or I am making the business better, if it went through bankruptcy or whatever, immediately going into a positive attitude. And when that happens, what's going to happen? Am I going to get negative or positive results? I'm going to get more positive results. And that's exactly what I want. And one of the reasons why I do these podcasts is it focuses on behavior, most of them. And that's why it's called Behavioral Profit. And I do all these different industries. And I don't specifically focus on a certain type of industry or a certain way of thinking, because there's all different industries out there. And there's one way, pretty much, to solve a lot of people's problems. It doesn't really have anything to do with the industry and all these outside forces and all these things. But if you're in this industry or this type of work, then you want to be able to relate to it. So that's kind of like the grab, and that's the attraction. And then we go into all these other things. So that was good. So you're an EOS implementer. When founding team insist their issues are purely operational, how do you reveal the hidden behavioral patterns sabotaging traction without sounding like a therapist in disguise?
Well, I guess just the way I work with the teams is we work on what we call the 90-day world. And when I come in and I help clients implement EOS in their business, we get the whole business set up on this 90-day cadence, which means they spend 90 days with their head down, running like heck in the business, and then we'll come and we'll have a quarterly meeting. And in that meeting, we look back over those 90 days and learn the lessons. Then we'll check back in with the vision for the business, and we'll set new priorities, assuming everybody's on the same page with the vision, and it's still a good vision, set new priorities for the next 90 days, and we dive into the business. So where this sort of gets revealed, the connection between like setting goals and setting these priorities, is we write this stuff down at each one of those quarterly meetings when they're called ROCs. ROCs are 90-day business priorities. And we write down what the priority is. Like, maybe it's new marketing strategy. Well, maybe the ROCs is called marketing strategy. And then we write down, like, what does done look like? So 90 days later, we're going to come back. How do we know that this project is successful or being completed? I'll help my clients write down what done looks like. So having got all of that defined and they're all in agreement that this is what we're going to do, they launch off and put their heads down, run like heck for the next 90 days. My point in all of this is when we get to the end of the quarter, and when we're looking at, did you get the ROC done or not done? And this is where maybe they might say, well, it's not done because of X, Y, Z, all of these excuses. And as you're sort of pointing out, like, as I'm a coach, I'm looking, is this really an external operational issue, or is it really about the internal who they're being? So having defined what the project was going to be. We get to the end, it didn't get completed. Now I really do have the ability to help that team see, right, by asking questions like what went on and to try to really drill down and get to the root cause. So the idea that, well, then maybe there was some external operational reason why we didn't get the marketing strategy, we got too busy. Could you tell me more about that? Why did you guys get too busy? You know, what was getting in the way of you guys meeting together to come up with the strategy? Why were you unable to? What was happening? We can just sort of keep on going down deeper and deeper and deeper until we really get to hopefully being able to shine a light on truly what was going on. And I think the art of coaching is not, like, if I just tell them, then they can go into defensive mode and they don't believe me or they do the self-justification. No one learns. So I've really got to just ask questions and then till they get to the answer, because that's always the thing, is the answer's in the room. That's one of the givens. I don't have the answer. They've got the answer. So we just need to keep on digging down until they get to an answer that is real, not just a made-up surface answer, but down at the root cause of what's going on.
You said the secret to pretty much all of my work is that I ask question after question after question. And everything from the evaluation when I work with a client all the way down to sessions that we have, it's constantly questions, because the person needs to be able to know and understand exactly what we're doing, because I'm not going to be doing the work. They are. So if they don't want to do something or they don't see that it's a problem, then I'm not going to force anybody. We just move on. So the other thing too I was thinking of is when we have a system or a strategy, we develop it, and that doesn't change because it's not human, especially if we're punching information into a computer. A computer is not human. It doesn't just say, I don't like this idea anymore. I don't like this system anymore. I'm going to change it. It's changed by humans. So if I develop something, it's always going to be that way until I change it. But whether I change it or not, and how I change it, 9 times out of 10 is based on and dictated by my behavior at that time and what's going to happen and what's happening in my world. Am I negative or my positive? So it's not only the system, because people will say, well, this doesn't work. And the system doesn't work. The computer's not working right. And they always want to point the finger. So they're constantly pointing the finger on something else, somebody else, instead of looking at themselves. So it's easy to blame it on somebody else. And it's easy to take the focus off of me and put the focus on another thing or another issue or another problem. And that way, we will think that it's the other thing, but it's not. And I know that is, but that depends on whether they want to change, whether they see it, or whether they really want to do something about it. Because I could be pointing the finger my whole life and be negative my whole life, and I'll never be successful. And even if I am, it'll just be a short period of time, because it'll be just a matter of time before I go down the tubes, and then my business will go down the tubes with it.
Absolutely.
So that was good. Yeah, that was good. Thank you. The next question is, positive intelligence places sabotagers and sage at the center of performance. Give us a moment when your own sabotager nearly torpedoed a project. What did you do, and how does that story land with hard-nosed executives who dismiss mindset talk?
In the work that I do with individual coaching, one of the frameworks I use is positive intelligence. So this is based on how we think, what's going on inside our minds. And it starts off with that judging voice. And everybody's got it, because we're just human. Some people call it the noisy roommate, the in your head. We just live in judgment of others and circumstances our whole lives. that doesn't always serve us very usefully. And in particular, there are other types of judgmental negative thinking or non-useful thinking that get in the way of us really being able to do things more productively. And so one of the ones for me, one of these saboteurs, is being a controller and sort of really always being a project manager and engineer. That was just kind of like, stand back, I'm an engineer, and like, I know what I'm doing. It's sort of been the way my life went and things. And so what that results in, or has resulted in the past, is sometimes I've been there because that controller mindset is like, I'm the only one who knows how to do this. And I'm the only one who knows how to do this. And so no one else can get this done. So what does that mean? It means I'm at the office in the weekends. It means that I'm working late nights while other people have gone home to enjoy their families and to enjoy their lives. And you asked me for a particular example. I don't know. I've got many from my past until I managed to turn the corner about how I'm thinking. But I can remember a big proposal we were working on in our business. This thing was worth tens of millions of dollars. And just my need to have it be right meant that I was in there all weekend working. I was the proposal manager, and I couldn't delegate and get people writing the bits of the proposal that they were experts in, because I was just holding on too tight and I needed it all done now and I didn't have the proper plan. And it ultimately resulted I had a moment where I just couldn't get there from here. And it was a bit of a breakdown moment. And so I had to go see my boss and just sort of reframe things and get a new plan in place. But I mean, ultimately, my need for control almost sank the entire proposal effort and meant that we wouldn't have got the proposal in. Thankfully, we did in the end, and we did win a piece of the work that we wanted. So it all turned out okay, but it was not a pretty sight. It was not a pretty experience, a good experience for me. And so really what I think is that these mindsets can come up in little ways that people kind of don't really realize and see. And then when we get these big failures happening in the business, right? If a proposal doesn't get submitted, or we don't win the proposal, or a major customer ends up getting ticked off and decides that they're going to take their business elsewhere. I mean, all of these things come as a result of mindset, right? From the perspective of the people working in the business. So there's a cost. There's a very real cost. It can be an externally measurable cost of we lose business, customers go away, or it can be a harder to sort of track cost, like turnover. People leaving jobs because they're burned out, or because they don't like working with somebody else, or they've got a toxic boss, that costs companies a lot of money. I mean, it costs, the statistics sometimes it's like 150% of somebody's salary is the cost to replace somebody. So the cost of having non-useful thinking and sort of the inefficiencies and the impediments that it makes to truly forming a high-performing team can be measured in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in some businesses.
It sounds like you gave an example of what we just spoke about in the last three questions, because what I develop can work, and I know it will work because it's worked in the past. But how am I going to implement it? What's my attitude? What's my behavior? And unfortunately, every day, that's a different thing. When I wake up, I could potentially be a completely different person than the day before. And the other thing too is I have friends that are in this field, in the scientific field, engineering. They actually do not this exact work, but something very, very similar on the same kind of mindset. And they focus on the facts, because in science, in engineering, all these different industries, everything is based on facts. But this type of work is not. It's based on changing your behavior, all of these things that we were just speaking about, right, in these last few questions. And that's something completely different. They had to change their whole entire everything, their life, their behavior, the way that they were thinking, everything in depth before they were able to do this work and help people, because that's ultimately what they did, just like you and I do. I don't have this experience, but I was thinking about that, just came to my mind when you were discussing this. So it's good. So designing racing yachts means balancing speed, safety, and cost under intense time pressure. Translate one principle from that arena into a leadership lesson that most boardroom overlook.
The most interesting principle for me that I, from my sailing days, that I bring into my work with my clients now is balance. This, you know, the subject of work-life balance is always a constant theme in businesses. And so people are always sort of, I think when people sort of talk about this work-life balance, I get the sense that people sort of have this idea like, I'm going to just figure this thing out and then I'm going to be good. And it's going to be in balance. My work and my life are going to be in balance. And I really, a sailboat is the ultimate machine to me. It's about balance. It's the wind coming into the sails, the waves, the healing of the boat, the righting moment that comes from the keel. Everything's in balance, but it's not a static balance. It's a dynamic balance. And when the wind blows a little bit more, as a gust comes in, the boat heels a little bit more, the forces of the righting moment forces in the boat increase, and the boat's speed increases, which means that the drag increases. All of these forces are in balance, but they're dynamically imbalanced. And I think that that's a better model. And if I start talking about that in your life, the idea that work-life balance is actually dynamic. And that might mean that one week, yeah, we are at the office 60 hours, and maybe we do miss a couple of family things. But then, okay, like if it's dynamic, then let's see what system can we put in place to kind of bring that back through center and then go back to, well, maybe we're going to balance a little bit more on the family the next week, right? And get a day off or something like that. Or a lot of hard-charging entrepreneurs I work with sometimes find that the work just overtakes everything. And now we haven't been on date night with my spouse in 2 months. And so it's like, okay, well, let's just realize that work-life balance is not static, it's dynamic. So let's bring that balance back through center and let's go and focus on some part of your life that got the short end of the stick for the last 2 weeks. So just really seeing that things move. And I think that's also a very useful mindset as well, just to know that things do move. So when I'm working hard 1 week, it's not going to be forever. It's just now. I'm going to get this project taken care of. And then next week, I will focus on family or my health or exercise or whatever it is. That phrase, this too shall pass, right, is sort of part of that. Things are dynamic. Things move. Things shift.
Yes, that was very good. That was another very good one, too. And that was exactly what we've been talking about, just reiterating. Okay, so the final question is, imagine the next economic downturn hits tomorrow. What inner capacity separates companies that adapt from those that panic? And how should listeners start cultivating it today?
What comes to mind is there is an amazing story that's told in the book Good to Great that Jim Collins wrote. And it's about Captain James Stockdale, who was a naval aviator during the Vietnam War. I think in 1965, he was shot down over Hanoi in Vietnam, and he's parachuting down into Hanoi. And Captain Stockdale was a student of Stoicism, and he was apparently, as he's recollecting, as he was parachuting down to the city, the hostile city below, he was saying, I'm entering the world of Epictetus. Epictetus was a slave in Rome whose master broke his leg capriciously just because he could, because he had that power over Epictetus. And so I'm telling you all of this as a long background because these are all, you know, external circumstances, right? And so Captain Stockdale ends up in prison in Hanoi for 7 years. And one of the things that came out of that lesson was something called the Stockdale Paradox. And the Stockdale Paradox, because he came to sort of see why some people survived being prisoners of war and some didn't. And what he really learned is that the thing that got him and the other people who did survive through this incredible experience was that they never, ever, ever gave up hope that they were going to prevail. It's the people who gave up hope that didn't make it. And so he could see that there were some people that they'd be in prison, and this is how he's relating the story, and they would think, well, we're going to be out by Christmas. Where they'd got that idea from, who knows, but we're going to be out by Christmas. And then Christmas would come and go, and they wouldn't be out. Oh, we're going to be out by Easter. And then Easter would come and go. And they would give up. Some people would give up hope, and then they perished. So the never, ever, ever give up hope that you're going to prevail got through. Now, the Stockdale paradox is that you cannot ignore the brutal reality of the circumstances that you're currently in. He was in prison in Hanoi, all of the things that were going on there. So never, never, never give up hope that you're going to prevail, and you cannot ignore the brutal reality of the circumstances that you're in. And I think that that mindset can help business owners in these deep economic downturns. There's a lot of uncertainty and other things going on. Just never lose hope, but you can't ignore the brutal reality. If revenue's gone down 75%, well, the brutal reality of that is we're going to have to readjust. We're going to have to trim staff. We're going to have to reduce inventory. We're going to have to close the second warehouse, whatever. You've got to address the brutal reality of the circumstances. You can't just be fantastical hope that, oh, we'll just ignore it and everything will turn out. No. You will prevail, but you've got to address this current circumstances. And I think that if people can hold that mental framework, it helps them get through these downturns.
Yeah, you can become anything you want, no matter where you are, even if it's jail, doesn't matter where. It's all about the attitude and the behavior.
Yeah.
Steve, thanks for steering us past the surface tactics and into the deeper waters of who we're being. You showed that when leaders recalibrate their inner compass, whether through positive intelligence, EOS, or the hard-won lessons of a racing yacht, their culture and numbers fall in line. Listeners, if today's conversation made you a bit uneasy, that's the signal to act. Grow never feels tidy at first. If you found value here, share the episode with a colleague who's still chasing quick fixes. Describe on your favorite platform so you'll never miss an insight that turns behavior into profit. I'm Debbie Longo. This is Behavioral Profit, where we challenge the way you lead so your team can win with purpose. Until next week, keep testing your assumptions, keep refining your habits, and keep turning leadership into your strongest asset. Steve, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Debbie.